Our next speaker, in many ways, helped pave the way for the alternative media covering marijuana. He's been at it for a long time activist with Normal. He's now the executive director with Portland Normal. He's got the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. He blogs for us at marijuanapolitics.com. He writes for High Times, Alternate, the Huffington Post. He is the thorn in the side of prohibitionists all across the country. One of the hardest working men in the marijuana movement. Give it up for Mr. Russ Belville.
Give it up one more time for Anthony Johnson. As he said, I'm Russ Belville. I'm the Howard Stern of marijuana, I guess, the king of all media, something like that. But it's my pleasure to be doing this. I can't believe it's actually a job. But I want to find out a little bit about the folks out there. How many of you are in the growing business or getting into it? Okay, how about the dispensing business or getting into it? Processors, like making edibles or tinctures? Okay. So everybody here is kind of, you know, obviously, medical marijuana business conference. You got a business angle here. So how does the business angle fit in with the media angle, fit in with what I'm doing? It's because what you do makes the stories that the media will report on. And sometimes you make our jobs easy. You get an Anthony Johnson running a Measure 91 and having a smart, sophisticated campaign, makes my job really easy to defend that. On the other hand, you have people opening up a medical marijuana dispensary and calling it wake and bake, makes my job a little harder, right? So I'm a little selfish on this. I'm looking about how are you gonna make my job easier as business people, and the way you'll do that is by following sensible regulations, pushing for strong self-policing, having high standards, you know, professionalizing this industry, forcing the people out there to understand that we are professional, law-abiding citizens who are just trying to fuel the American economy and trying to bring something that's been happening for years above ground to benefit society as a whole. So, some of the ways that we can start thinking about this is to think about how the media is portraying us and what effect we can have on those portrayals. When I first started getting into this, around 2008, I was working for National Normal, and I was on a media panel of some sort, and there was a presentation I was doing, and I did like a top 10 list of the pot pun headlines. Have you seen these? You get these, you get some serious news story to come out, you know, say it's a legislative failure, and they'll say, the plans of the initiative went up in smoke Tuesday. It was a pipe dream. They just couldn't hash it out. Right? These are mainstream organizations, mainstream USA Today, New York Times, you know, LA Times, with pot pun headlines. And I struggle to think if this were a serious legislative failure for the LGBT community, or black community, or handicapped community, that they'd be so light about it, that they'd use this pun and these kind of derogatory terms. Anthony brought up that point of going to the Oregonian about medical around marijuana. And these things are important because we all live in conceptual frames. And the frames define how we see things and how we vote and how we decide on leadership and so forth. And if the frame around medical is, you know, sarcasm quotes, makes it harder for people like me to defend what's going on. So that's why it's important that we catch these people, catch the media, catch the government especially when they use these kind of terms, and call them on it. The LGBT community did this years ago when they pushed for accurate reporting of their issues, to no longer call it gay marriage but marriage equality, to no longer call it homosexuality but to call it gay and lesbian. There's all sorts of ways they influence the debate by changing the frames. So as business people, media sources, by the way, are in the business of selling advertising, and they can only sell advertising if they're getting a lot of clicks, if they're getting a lot of hits. And if they know that the business people out there might not want to advertise with them if their industry is being portrayed in a negative way, that's going to affect the way they report as well. Another thing that I think is important as far as what I'm doing, and a lot of folks, Smell the Truth, a lot of great blogs, Marijuana Politics, is that we are providing the important counter narrative sometimes because the way the mainstream media will report on things can be shaped by our opponents, who oftentimes have PhDs behind their names, they have the trust of the public because they work in the rehab industry, or they're in law enforcement, or they're elected officials who, despite all that, don't really know a whole lot about what they're talking about when it comes to marijuana. There's a lot of ignorance out there, and those of us who are educated in this have the duty to report on this and to show how they are misframing our issue. So let me give you an example, because I was just so thrilled this week that this was coming up, this panel came up, and this week there was like four or five different stories that covered my point exactly. It's like the timing couldn't have been better. The first thing that happened, this was back last month in August, there's two surveys that the federal government does on the use of marijuana in America, or use of drugs in America. One is called Monitoring the Future. It's been done by the University of Michigan since 1975, and since 75, they've asked 12th graders their various experience with drugs and alcohol. Over time, they added 8th and 10th graders, undergrads, and so forth, added more questions, but generally, this has been a long-term, since 75, what is that, we're 40 years now, of this study where they ask questions about drug and alcohol use. So this time, when they asked these questions, they found out that there was a slight rise in the pot smoking among college kids. And college kids defined as the first 4 years out of high school, so 18 to 22-ish area. And there was headlines all over the internet, all over the papers that said, pot smoking in college is on the rise. Pot smoking in college is the highest it's ever registered since 1980. And the way they do this is they take this little fact, which is technically true, out of context and away from any other of the facts that would give you some idea what's really gone on here. There was a hint of it with some other headlines. Some other headlines came out and said, more college kids are smoking pot daily than cigarettes. More college kids are smoking pot than cigarettes, oh my God. And the whole idea, the framing around this was, A, legalization happened, and B, oh my God, they're smoking pot. Well, you could have kind of predicted that, perhaps, but how scary was it in context? Well, the headlines actually should have read, slight rise in pot smoking, alcohol and cigarette use at lowest rates ever recorded. Mm-hmm. It's not that pot smoking went through the roof and past cigarette smoking, it's that cigarette smoking crashed through the floor below pot smoking. And there's these great graphs, you can find them on Marijuana Politics. I drew up the graphs of the alcohol use, tobacco use, and the marijuana use among the different age groups. And basically what we found is since I went to high school, I graduated in 85. In 1985, 9 out of 10 of my high school senior classmates had tried alcohol, at least tried it. And 7 out of 10 had tried cigarettes, and about 5 out of 10 had tried pot. Now, in the latest data, kids graduating high school, seniors, about 7 out of 10 have tried alcohol, about 4 out of 10, less than 4 out of 10 are smoking cigarettes, and about 4 out of 10 are smoking pot. Now, we didn't arrest or ticket or fine or force rehab anybody who is an adult who is smoking or drinking in that time to get those declines. But the media won't give you that context. We have to force that context. We have to say that pot smoking doesn't happen in a vacuum or over just a 1 year period. We have 40 years worth of data to look at here. And so that's part of what we do, is to give context. Another story that came up is that the National Survey on Drug Use and Health came out. This is the second of those studies that asks about drug and alcohol use amongst various populations. And the Project SAM office here in Oregon, which there exists such a thing now, talk about timing, about 3 years late, right? But anyway, there's a Project SAM is Smart Approaches to Marijuana. It's Kevin Sabet's organization. It's the leading anti-legalization org out there. And so this guy from Project SAM Oregon made a big deal of the fact that in the latest figure, the 1 year increase among teenage monthly pot smokers in Colorado, it went up like 4.8% or something. It was don't have the number memorized, but it went up a slight bit, right? 4 or 5%. Big, huge deal. We legalized pot in Colorado and more teenagers are smoking pot. But the context he left out is that the state of Florida, pot smoking among teenagers went up like 7%. Florida went up more than Colorado. Utah went up more than Washington. So there's context that they leave out, and it's up to us to provide this context. Third story, on this same national survey on drug use and health, they came out with a headline that says, Health and Human Services, this is Project Sam again, at the national level, Health and Human Services finds that pot smoking dramatically increasing among the youth. Pot smoking, marijuana use dramatically increasing among the youth. And within the text, they say, among monthly pot smokers, teenagers who smoke pot monthly, those who smoke 20 days or more a month, the heavy users, went up a staggering percentage, went up, it significantly increased. Marijuana legalized in Colorado, significant increase in heavy use among monthly pot smokers. And so I have this tendency, whenever they state something like that, I want to go find the table and actually look it up. And I looked it up and I discovered they transposed the years. Heavy monthly use actually decreased almost 15% in the year after legalization. So I called them on it, wrote a post on marijuanapolitics.com, left a comment with a link to the table that the federal government produces saying, you might want to take a look at line 5 there. They changed the text within, but didn't change the headline. They kept blurring that headline out over the Labor Day weekend. Not accidental, folks, in my opinion. This is when the kids are going back to school and it's time to scare the parents and let's just show them how bad legalization is. Fortunately, Christopher Ingraham for the Washington Post picked up on this and wrote a piece on this that forced Kevin Sabet and these guys to issue a blundering public apology and take down the headline. So this is the kind of impact we are having now where the mainstream is starting to have our back. Washington Post is starting to have our back. So to wrap up, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, right? I lived through Nancy Reagan showing up on Different Strokes to tell Arnold and Willis to say no to drugs. Remember who's with me, right? I lived through the time when the federal government was supplying money surreptitiously to TV producers, Hollywood producers, to slip in anti-drug storylines into the sitcoms and the family dramas. We lived through the war. I go back to the, this is your brain on drugs, fried egg ad, all the way through the George W. Bush, you smoke pot, so you helped terrorism ads. So to be at this time in history when we have billboards out on MLK with a big hunk of shatter on them, when we've got entrepreneurs sitting in this audience and all throughout the state who are ready to actually have a growth industry, pardon the pun, in this country once again, jobs that can't be shipped to Mexico, jobs that can't be outsourced, jobs that can't be replaced by technology. I am so honored and proud to be doing the job I'm doing in the media. I'm Radical Russ. You can find me everywhere online under Radical Russ. Thank you so much.